regarding Derren Turn roadworks, surely Derren Turn belongs to the residents and not the engineers, who might not even live in the county. The residents should have been consulted. I'm not sure if they were consulted. Perhaps some of the local councillors might get in touch with us there and let us know, was there a consultation process on that? Because Pádraic McAvoy, independent councillor on the Clane Maynooth MD, has been in touch to say the increase of footpath widths to define the standard widths of roads is to improve pedestrian safety, shorten their walking distances as they cross roads, and to calm traffic movement at junctions, for example, improve sight lines, slow movement, etc. The widths should be in line with the design manual for urban roads to ensure all vehicles can fit through. I think a representation on the proposed Derren Turn scheme welcomed the design to improve walking safety near the school entrance. If improved walking services are provided in urban areas, this serves the significant number of walkers and cyclists that otherwise would use a car for a 1 kilometre to 2 kilometre trip, leaves more room for other drivers who cannot walk or cycle further distances. And that is in from Pádraic McAvoy, independent councillor on the Clane Maynooth Municipal District. Owen, it's the same as the new roundabout on the Clane Road in Salins. If you're walking or cycling towards the graveyard, there is no footpath or cycle lane after the roundabout. It's an accident waiting to happen. The traffic coming off the bypass onto the Salins Road do so at serious speed. It's only a matter of time before there is an accident. God knows, we've had enough tragedy in the village. Does it have to happen again before something is done about it? I know particularly in Salins Village, a lot of road safety measures have been put in place. For example, those bollards, also speed ramps as well. But I see the point that you're making. Perhaps they should be pushed further out towards the Clane Road, and we need confirmation as to whether or not that will happen or whether they're finished now with the amount of works done in Salins. We'll follow that up. Pádraic McAvoy has been in touch as well again to talk to us about those roadworks in Derren Turn, but also he says there's similar works to be carried out in Robertstown. There is a public consultation on that, and you can get more details on the Kildare County Council website. Fintan Brett as well, the Fine Gael councillor in the Naas MD, indeed Cathaoirleach of Naas as well. Reflective bollards in Salins at present are an interim measure. They will be replaced by a permanent layout where carriageway will remain narrowed, wider footpaths and cycle paths, and raised platforms at estate entrances to reduce traffic speed. The day of wide streets to facilitate cars through villages are long gone, and people need to get used to it. This is not an Irish thing. It's happening all over Europe. Fintan, that's fair enough, but those bollards that are in Salins and the bollards that are in Newbridge, as you say, they're an interim measure and they're going to be replaced. Replaced with what? Is there still going to be something along the road, or are we just going to have cycle lanes? You might clear that up for us, because I think, you know, people are okay with cycle lanes and perhaps the road being narrowed, but those bollards, some people are unhappy with. Just let us know whether there's a permanent bollard going to be erected in those towns and villages around the county. Lots more coming up, and we can go to Ciara now for the next topic.
Yes, yesterday morning I discussed this story. Owners leaving their dogs at shelters. They were citing mental health issues, housing problems and the cost of living crisis. And it was Modra, Mutt's Anonymous Dog Rescue and Adoption, the founder there discussing this. And I'm delighted to say Marina Fiddler, the founder of Modra, joins me this morning. Hello to you, Marina.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. First off, I want you to let us know about Modra, what they do, what they are and how you were founded.
So Modra started in 2005 specifically to deal with dogs in the local authority pounds. At the time, there was a kill rate in pounds, which was very high. It could be up to 80-90%, which meant that the dogs that went in, 80% didn't get out in the way that we would like them to get out. So we set up and we started working closely with the local authorities, and it was a really good system. We were very successful. We got the kill rates reduced to single numbers. Single digits, and this happened nationwide. Local authorities became much more aware, the public became more aware, and the rescue stepped up and did a lot of the work. And so now it feels like we've gone back in time. I mean, it's
so. Can I just ask you, Marina, what would be the kill rate as you worded it in pounds nowadays?
Well, it's not gone high yet, except in the ones that never went low, because we're really struggling to try and make sure that we get every dog in. the system has become so jammed up now.
But when
so
you say not high, like, could you give me a percentage potentially
at
the moment?
I would say about 12% would be about average.
Okay, so that's a huge improvement from 80 to 90.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's now over the course of a lot of years.
Yes, of course.
But what's happening now is because we've got this high standard, we cannot go back to the dark ages. We just can't. But the numbers of dogs that are coming in and that are being requested to surrender is going off the scale, and we just don't know what to do. So, for example, we take from the pounds. If we and the dogs that are coming into us are just not easy to step to bounce straight into a home again. They're not dogs that are just going to fit happily into a pet home. The dogs that have been bought during COVID, the dogs that have suffered either medical or emotional distress, and so they're not ready to go into a home. So they're blocking up our kennels. We then can't take from the pounds. Pounds then are blocking up there because they don't want to put them to sleep anymore because they're not, you know, that we've got a new way of doing things. And so now, but at the same time, the wardens are legally obliged to pick up a stray dog. And then, so people that can't get a dog surrendered into a rescue, they either go to the pound or they dump them. So there's still the same amount of dogs. It's just they're coming in through every avenue now.
And since then, you have noted, since 2005, local authorities, they have become more proactive about the issue of unwanted dogs, so the microchipping and the vaccinating, etc. Local authorities, can you comment at all about Kildare County Council, the surrounding areas? Do you know the strategy there or the situation?
I don't know anything about Kildare specifically, I'm afraid, but I know that there's very few local authorities now that are not stepping up.
Okay.
Certainly Galway Mayo have been amazing. Leitrim is another huge one that they're very successful. Because the rescues and the local authorities worked hand in hand, and we worked very well together. But as I said, this is unprecedented now. We've just got so many dogs coming in. We're having to tell them that we've built up such a relationship, and now we're having to say, I'm sorry, we can't take them. So that leaves them completely stuck.
You said you're back at square one because of how long it can take, as you noted, to rehabilitate and rehome certain dogs. If that's the situation at the moment, what can be done about it? Because these issues that I'm mentioning, like the cost of living, the housing problems, and of course mental health issues, they all have been impacted by the past 2.5 years.
I know, and that's probably why we're feeling so desperate at the moment, because it's been relentless for the last 6 months. And there's no end in sight. And the spin-offs from COVID are still there. People are suffering from huge anxiety. Anything that the human is suffering, be it financial or emotional, that translates to the dog as well, or the pet or the cat. And so homelessness, another one. We've got an awful lot of people who are being evicted and they have nowhere to go with their pets. And we all know the renting crisis already. So add a few pets into that mix and you've got a real disaster, a real animal welfare issue.
Absolutely, and it's just heartbreaking as personally a huge dog lover to hear things like that. You know, the emotions that the human is feeling are passed on to the animal, no matter what type of animal it is.
Yeah.
But there are people out there, Marina, that want to help, that want to adopt, that want to do anything they possibly can at the moment to help these animals. And Modra.ie obviously are allowing people to adopt these dogs. But tell us more information about how people can get in touch. I'm sure there's vetting processes that people have to go through.
There is, and we are still getting a lot of applications, and people do want to help, but almost every application that comes in says they want a nice dog to fit in with the family and they've got children. And some of our dogs just don't fit that criteria.
Right.
So maybe because of where we're positioned, we are in Connemara, we get a lot of farm dogs and sheep dogs, and they don't always... No, they will come around with time, but they're taking up a lot of space and a lot of time. They deserve that chance, don't get me wrong, but they're not what a lot of people are looking for.
And is, Marina, you know, you're mentioning the dog and the sheepdogs and the farm dogs, etc., is it best for them then to go to a home, would say in this county of Kildare, that is a farm, that is around a lot of land? Is that the best bet? Like, people who are calling from smaller houses with smaller gardens, etc., maybe don't get in contact?
Not necessarily. There's always an exception to the rule, but a lot of farm dogs find urban living very stressful. The traffic, they're overstimulated by noise and by movement, because that's what they're trained to do. That's what they're designed to do, with particularly collies. But you don't have to have a farm. You could just have a rural environment or a secure garden that's big and that's sheltered. and then you can go for walks up the hill or on the beach or whatever. But it's just about, it's about knowing what the dog needs and not just looking at what you want. And I don't mean to say that all our applications are people trying to help, but we just may not have a dog to match them at this time. Now, okay. we keep them on the list, and we occasionally get puppies in. The funny thing is, we thought when COVID was over that we'd get all these Bichons and these designer dogs bouncing into us. We were kind of expecting that, but we haven't, and we're quite concerned that they're being sold on because people want to recoup their money.
Okay.
Which
okay.
creates another problem. But what we have seen, particularly in Connemara now and in Galway, is a lot of hoarding situations where mental health issues have meant that people have been very isolated and they've allowed the dogs to breed. We've had homes with single men in them with up to 24 dogs living in the house.
Okay, some of the situations are absolutely atrocious, obviously, there, Marina. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. That is Marina Fidler. She's the founder of Mutts Anonymous Dog Rescue and Adoption, MADRA as it's known as. And if you want to get in touch with MADRA, whether that's to donate, adopt, etc., you can head on to their website. It's madra.ie, M-A-D-R-A, and you can also contact them by phone 091-577-813, email info@madra.ie.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Kildare KFM.
Crime Watch on KFM.
With Manguard Plus, Ladytown Business Park, Naas. We keep it secure and safe 24 hours a day. 045 408 300.
Yes, and on the line for Crime Time this morning is Gardaí Deirdre Fanning of Clane Garda Station. Good morning to you, Deirdre.
Good morning.
And issues that we are getting to today in Maynooth, in Leixlip and in Castlewarden as well as Newbridge. We're going to start off in Maynooth though, and a couple of incidents here, starting off with an unauthorised taking of a car. This happened in the Clune Even Estate in Maynooth on last Friday.
Yes, last Friday, there was a couple of connected incidents. The first one started at 1:30 in the morning when the owner of a car heard it starting outside his house, and when he checked out, the car was being driven away. There was no entry to the house, and the keys of the car were with the owner. That was in the Clune Even Estate in Maynooth. And then shortly afterwards, at 2:05 in the morning in Parsons Hall, Maynooth, there was another car taken from the driveway of a house in that estate. It was a 09 red Mazda Demio. And then shortly afterwards at 2:10 a.m. at Carton Court, Maynooth, a man saw a couple of males trying to break into his neighbour's car in Carton Court. So he disturbed these men and they fled the scene in what are believed to be the two cars that were taken earlier in Clune Even and Parsons Hall. They fled the scene in a red car and a white car, which would have been the white Corolla and the red Mazda that was taken earlier. So the 09 red Mazda was observed by Gardaí travelling towards Dublin and was followed, but the suspects abandoned this car and fled on foot in Santry. And then the white Corolla was later found in Coolock. So there would have been a good bit of activity there between 1:30 a.m. and 2:10 a.m. when these guys were going around these different estates of Maynooth. They were in three different estates altogether, Clune Even, Parsons Hall and Carton Court. So the two cars that were taken were recovered. It was a failed attempt on the third car in Carton Court. But later on then, in Rinnewade Crescent in Leixlip, now it's likely that this is connected as well, mm-hmm. but it was also a Friday and it was a bit later, it was at 10 to 8 in the morning, a 07 beige Toyota Land Cruiser was taken from a driveway in Rinnewade Crescent in Leixlip, and the owner followed it for a while onto the M4 and it went towards Dublin. Now this vehicle hasn't been recovered yet. So again, I know people are probably concerned when they hear this, but like all the keys were with the owner, so it seems to be, you know, good old-fashioned car thief. The cars that were recovered, the cars had been started by interference with the ignition, so that there was no break-ins to the houses involved there. Mm. But again, there's one car still hasn't been recovered. It's the 07 beige Toyota Land Cruiser. So just if people in those locations, maybe if they have doorbell cams, if they could check for that night in question, Friday the 5th of August.
Yeah, and just to go through those estates again, Deirdre, because as you say, it appears that these are all connected. Cluneven in Maynooth, Parsons Hall in Maynooth, Carton Court in Maynooth, and Rinnowade Crescent in Leixlip, all
in
on
Leixlip,
Friday,
yeah.
The 5th of August, to do with unauthorised authorised taking of cars. And just remind us of the makes of the cars again, Deirdre.
The first car was a white Toyota Corolla Estate, that was from Cluneven. The second car was a red Mazda Demio, it's a hatchback. That was from Parsons Hall. And these males also went into Carton Court, but they didn't actually succeed in taking a car there.
Okay, perfect. And also then, Deirdre, there was a robbery from a person, this time in Castle Warden.
Yeah, it was actually on last Friday as well. It happened at 10 o'clock in the morning. An elderly man was driving down the hill from the direction of Oogderard Cemetery. People might know it as Arthur Guinness's graveyard either. So he was driving down the hill, and when he came to the crossroads there that heads on towards Castlemorden Golf Club, there was a small silver hatchback car stopped at the crossroads coming from his left. And a male of about approximately 25 years of age got out of his car. He was in a grey jacket. He stepped out onto the road, and the elderly man driving had to stop his car. Then another male approached, pulled open the door and pulled out this man from the car, and he had a wallet on him which they took. He had a sum of money in it, and they got back into the car and went in the direction of the N7 up by Castlemorden Golf Club. The man was unharmed, but obviously he was very shaken up. So inquiries are ongoing in that area in relation to CCTV on house and things like that, but that car, we have no better description other than it was a silver hatchback. A small silver hatchback. It would have been maybe in the Castlewarden area in the run-up to that at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. That was on Friday the 5th of August
on
as well.
Friday 5th, yeah.
If we then move to Monday of this week, so just a couple of days ago, there was an assault causing harm in Newbridge on James's Lane.
Yeah, just Monday gone, James's Lane in Newbridge at approximately 12:30, just coming up to lunchtime. Two males were injured at this location. They approached a Jeep that pulled up there. It's believed the occupant of the Jeep and the two males knew each other. The occupant of the Jeep got out and assaulted these males, and they received injuries. There was a knife wound involved in the assault. Non-life-threatening injuries, but there was a vehicle involved with the Gardaí are eager to trace. It was a silver Jeep. The make and model hasn't been verified yet. Definite line of inquiry being followed there. But James Lane in Newbridge, between 12:30 and 12:40, if anyone is in the area, dash cam or any footage like that, is interested in tracing up that silver Jeep where the occupant assaulted two males in that location.
Okay, just before we let you go then, Deirdre, I know particularly Gardaí want to get messages out about road safety, particularly when the sun is quite low. We've had advice from the Road Safety Authority as well, just be mindful of driving in those conditions. And also there were a couple of, tool marking events that were taking place around the county, and Gardaí just advising people around the county to keep tools or expensive equipment locked away in sheds, etc.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And I know we preach this a lot, but just to, especially during the hot weather when windows and doors are open, just to make sure that they're locked at night and everything is secured, and outside as well. If you have sheds, lock them up. We want the air flowing on a hot day like today, but just to secure everything in the evenings.
Okay, super stuff. That is Garda Deirdre Fanning of Clane Garda Station with our look at the crimes for this week. And again, the names of those estates in the north of the county with the unauthorised taking of cars: Cluneven Estate in Maynooth, Parsons Hall and Carton Court also in Maynooth, along with the Rinnowade Estate in Leixlip. That happened on the 5th of August. There was a robbery from a person in Castle Warden out near Oughterard Cemetery, also on the 5th of August, Friday just gone, and then assault causing harm on Monday just gone in James's Lane in Newbridge. Anyone with any information on those range of crimes, get in touch with your local Garda station, or indeed any Garda station in the county.
Crime Watch on KFM.
With Manguard Plus, Ladytown Business Park Nace, PSA licensed, 045 408 300 or manguardplus.ie.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. Well, after a two-year absence due to COVID-19, the Rose of Tralee makes its long-awaited return next week. The event, understandably due to the impact of the pandemic and 2 years of lockdowns, will be a slightly smaller affair than its pre-COVID days, but it still has plenty to offer with a sizeable lineup of entertainment to suit all ages and tastes. Obviously, the biggest change is the festival's move from its previous home, the Rose Hotel, to the Meadowlands Hotel and the Munster Technological University Sports Academy Complex. And as usual, the pre-festival tour is taking place around the country, and you have a chance to meet the Roses this coming weekend and into the early part of next week at Barberstown Hotel, where KFM will be broadcasting live on Monday afternoon. On the line now, we have Managing Director of Barberstown Castle, Ted Robinson. Ted, very good morning to you and welcome to the programme.
Hi, good morning, Owen. How are you? How are you getting on?
I'm not too bad. So the Roses are going to be in Barberstown Castle. Is it Sunday and Monday of this weekend and into next week?
That's correct. We're really looking forward to welcome to the Barberstown Hotel. They're coming to us on Sunday evening, a lovely barbecue, and then they're going to be touring around all of Kildare on Monday to see all the great sights. And then we have a Rose Ball where we have sold out over 200 people there, and Keith Barry is going to be performing for the Roses. And obviously yourselves, KFM, are going to be there 11 o'clock till 2 o'clock on Monday. And we welcome all families and kids to come down and hopefully get a picture with the Roses and meet them. And it's going to be a fun day.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit more about the schedule for the day. So you mentioned Keith Barry is going to be there. There's going to be a barbecue as well. So what's the timeline then of the events on Monday?
So Monday morning, obviously the Roses will be up bright and early, and they're going to tour around, going to be visiting various attractions around Kildare. Leixlip Castle, Castletown House, Cliff of Lines, popping over to Carton and the Cake Club and doing archery and golf events and so forth. And then they're coming back to us around 5 o'clock and there'll be opportunities for young kids to meet the Roses and get autographs and pictures. And then we have a Rose Ball, basically about 200 people there in the banquet hall where, you know, people have booked tables and there'll be two Roses per table, and then Keith Barry's going to perform later on. Dottie O'Shea will be there. It'll be really relaxed atmosphere and just lots of fun. And then the next day they're on their way down to Tralee.
Yeah, hopefully the weather will hold up as well for Sunday and Monday. I know it's to be good for the weekend, but hopefully the rain holds off on Monday. Now, the festival itself, as I say, takes place next week, starting on Friday the 19th of August, and the two televised selection nights on Monday and Tuesday, August 22nd and 23rd. The famous Festival Dome is no more. It will instead be replaced by a smaller marquee venue in the Abbey Car Park in the town centre, which will be homed to a number of paid concerts. I'm assuming as well there'll be some photographs taken in Barberstown Castle, Ted, because I was at a wedding there before, and the venue and the area around the castle is just beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful, and all the gardens, and we've about 18 acres there, and lots of opportunities for photos in the castle. Really relaxed atmosphere. Our vision is to be a home away from home and just to be just a real family friendly hotel where we welcome all guests. So lots of opportunities for kids to get the photos. And we have the best radio station in the country. KFM going to be there 11 to 2. I think Pat's going to be looking after the day, and loads of prizes to give out and lots of fun and activities. And I met Dottie last week. He's full of energy. Can't wait for the whole festival to start again. And I met Ashley, our Kildare Rose, yesterday. Very excited. And we have Jennifer from Newfoundland. We have Katrina from New York. Lots of roses from all over the world, from Texas to Perth to Queensland and so forth. So all travelling as we speak. I've seen them online travelling, and they'll be arriving to us in Barberstown on Sunday evening for a great fun 2 days.
Yeah, super stuff. And as we said, KFM going to be broadcasting live from Barberstown Castle on Monday with Pat Costello and all the gang. So you can join us there or on the air for a great day's fun and activities. And that is Ted Robinson, Managing Director of Barberstown Castle. Looking forward to that. And Ted, many thanks for joining us this morning. Back to some of the messages then. I just heard that the more houses built around areas in Kildare, and now we're all struggling with getting children into school. school, especially if you have siblings in schools. It doesn't help anymore. It's absolutely disgraceful. We all know people are in need for housing, but building would have to be stopped, and think about it first. We really need more national schools, play schools, creches, particularly in Kill. Hopefully this is something that could be looked into. You're saying you need more shops in the village, particularly around some of the estates, more national schools and secondary schools and creches around the county. Thanks indeed for getting in touch. And back to Derren Turn. Hi, I live on the main road in Derren Turn going into the village, and it's unbelievable the speed on that stretch of the road. I think I got to this message earlier and you were saying that the lorries just speed through it as well. We need ramps in before you enter the speed limit through the whole village. Actually, let's touch on that subject then with a local councillor, Pádraig McAvoy, who has been in touch with us throughout the morning. Pádraig, independent councillor on the Clane Maynooth Municipal District. Good morning to you and thanks for taking the call.
Good morning, all. Happy to talk.
So you would have heard what Mike had to say when he was on the programme there in the first hour. He's from Dunedee, but he was in Derren Turn over the weekend and perhaps confused why we're narrowing the roads. What can you tell us, or what explanation can you give us?
I suppose, look, I understand where Michael comes from. You arrive in a town, the place is in a mess. They're breaking eggs everywhere to make a new omelette. And the key point, I suppose, is why do the roads appear narrower? So in a rural context, roads are kind of defined as sitting between the hedges. And as lorries travel those roads, they kind of widen the roads over time, and the roads kind of get inch out wider and wider. But in a town where you have to reserve space for walking, footpaths are the safest way to do that once the population builds up to a certain size, or the traffic going through is of a certain quantum. And the council, in order to get insurance for what they're doing, have to comply with design standards. So they went to consultation on a public realm improvement scheme outside the school, and the general principle, and I will go back up and have another look and see what Michael is saying, but the general principle is to build out the footpath up to the standard width of a road. And in an urban setting, I think that's about 3 metres per lane, but there are times when it's smaller. And it means that all vehicles, articulated lorries down to motorbikes, I suppose, can get through. But that said, it shortens the distance between the curbs, so that the pedestrian crossing a junction is crossing a relatively shorter route across the road that may be busy with traffic coming from different directions.
Go ahead.
Your other listener pointed out the speed some of the drivers are doing on the main run on the R403, I think is what I picked up from her description. Mm-hmm. And you'd notice that if there's no footpaths on the edge of a junction and you approach it at some speed and there's no other cars sitting on that junction, you can probably cross some white lines without incident, and you can probably travel through that junction at a relatively higher speed. But if there are defined shoulders or curbs on the edge of the road, which do take time to get used to reading again, because if you always travel through a junction at a particular speed and now it seems tightened, your instincts will be to slow down. And that is, if you're trying to walk up a footpath and you encounter an obstacle like a bin or something, and someone's coming the other direction, you have to pause and negotiate for that, for each other to pass safely. The design standards for urban streets takes account of that, and instead of relying on speed limits and bylaws associated with that and having to have a guard in place to calm things down, when people negotiate a piece of physical infrastructure, it requires them to address it in a slower way. So if someone's standing at that footpath edge, looking in different directions, looking to pass across the road, then if cars are approaching a little bit slower, they can see the pedestrian and the pedestrian can see them, you much reduce the chance of risk and danger to everybody.
Yeah, the road that I gather from those listeners is the main road into Derren Turn, coming, say, from the Killinagh side, where there's no speed ramps there, but also no continuous white line. So they're saying the cars are coming in at serious speeds and overtaking as well, which we'll follow up on. And I know there have been calls from residents for speed ramps to be installed there for a number of years. What about Robertstown as well? You say there's a consultation process there with regard to works being carried out outside the National School in Robertstown.
Yeah, so the councillors were asked to a special meeting of the council. It happened a week after our regular monthly meeting, and at that meeting we signed off or approved the two schemes for the engineers to proceed during the summer recess period at the schools. And in the Robertstown instance, it's traffic calming, ramps and new lighting, drainage and footpath widening. So again, it's to extend the footpath reach as far as is feasible from the schools to ensure that people walking the last half a kilometre to the school aren't trying to walk around the back of cars. And look, it mightn't be the fairest reference to make, but unfortunately we heard about a little 4-year-old girl passed away at an accident in a campsite in the west in the last week. And I don't know the details of that, but I know that vehicles and small people don't mix well. Parents are more anxious. Drivers are in a hurry. They're trying to get perhaps their own children to school or trying to get around traffic. But if there's more footpath connections and people are walking the last distance, bigger numbers of people are walking the last distance or avoiding the need for a car at all, if they can, then that leaves road space for those that have to otherwise drive. They're that bit further away from the school, perhaps, or perhaps they're driving through the town.
Okay.
So there are trade-offs, but on balance, as the population rises and the number of cars rises towards 1 million by 2030, if we don't reserve space for walkers and cyclists with physical infrastructure, there'll be more accidents and more regrets.
Another listener says that cars are driving well over the speed limit in Derren Turn. The limit is 50 kilometres. They're definitely doing about 80 while in the south of the county. Another texter says, good morning, Owen. There's a significant issue of tractors coming into Athy at speed and drivers, young and old, you say that they are on their phones when they're coming in. The Woodstock Street, home of an elderly population and many children, has got to be the most dangerous place to cross at the moment. It's very unsafe, and you say there seems to be no appetite from the council to address the speed. We'll speak to some of the local councillors there and see what the situation is. While back in Sallins, Fintan Brett, Fine Gael councillor, has been on to us. I asked him the question is if those reflective bollards in Sallins are an interim measure and they're to be replaced by a permanent layout, does that mean they're going to be permanent bollards? And he says the costings are being done at present for replacing bollards in Sallins with more visible ones. He says he would support that measure. That is our look at road safety issues around the county at the moment. And independent councillor on the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, Pádraig McAvoy, many thanks for joining us on the programme and taking our call this morning to address those issues. Just before we wrap up, a couple of other things that I want to get to. And Ciara, news breaking that we covered this actually on the pay-per-view this morning, but we have some more information that an amber alert has been issued on the electricity market, and that's for the second day in a row. Give us some details here.
Yeah, just going back over what you did discuss this morning. So in a message on the website of the Single Electricity Market Operator, that's SEMO, this morning, the reason given for the amber alert is, in quotes, a generation shortfall in this country. Yesterday, EirGrid said in its statement that the alert meant the buffer between the demand for electricity and the available supply was smaller than optimum. Another quote, it does not indicate a loss of electricity supply to customers, it added. The reasons for yesterday's system alert were low wind, limited electricity imports and some forced outages at a number of generators. People may remember during Kildare Focus, I was texted in by one person who was in Naas Town Centre, shops, banks, etc. in the area for about an hour, didn't have any electricity. Amber alerts, they are issued when there's a threat to the supply of electricity. SEMO is a joint venture between EirGrid and Sonai, the Northern Ireland grid operator. And elsewhere, Bloomberg News is reporting that Britain is making plans for organised blackouts for industry and households over this winter, when cold weather may coincide with gas shortages, as we know an impact of the Russian invasion of Ukraine that happened on the 24th of February. And any more details on Britain's potential plans for those blackouts, we will bring you later in the day, Owen.
Absolutely. Keep an ear out to us here on KFM. We'll have much more throughout the course of our news bulletins here. here on the station. Just before we take a break to finish up, we're going to finish on a bit of a positive note because it's been a jam-packed programme with lots going on over the last couple of hours. But on this day, back in 1984, John Tracy, the famous Irish athlete, he won silver at the 1984 Los Angeles Olympics. On this day in 84, the 10th of August, and here is the legendary Jimmy McGee calling him home.
John Tracy has moved away from spinning, and Tracy is bound for the Olympic podium. Carlos Lopez of Portugal, a first ever gold medal for Portugal at the marathon. And John Tracy appears in the stadium.
He's very tired.
4:71. He's tired, but he's great and he's good and he's hanging on. Charlie's bidding just behind him. But now it looks like Tracy is absolutely certain of a medal. Carlos Lopez in the finishing straight. The gold medal is his.
And John Tracy's pulling away from spinning.
Carlos Lopez is coming in to take the gold medal in the Olympic Games of 1984 at Marathon. Now we can concentrate on the battle for second and third. Tracy has come away from spinning. As the pictures acclaim Lopez, the crowd are still watching. Down on the track, they're looking at two men, an Irishman and a Briton. They're going for silver, they're going for bronze. John Tracy is 100 metres to go. In the past, Ireland have won bronze medals. John Caldwell, Freddie Gilroy, Sax Byrne, Jim McCourtney, Russell. They've won golds, Pat O'Callaghan twice, Bob Tizzle, Ron Delaney. They've won silvers with John McNally, Fred Teed, Wilkinson, Wilkinson. And for the 13th time, an Irish medal goes to John Tracy. The crowd stand to the Irishman from Villierstown in Waterford. My fellow commentators are on their feet. It is quite remarkable. The little man with a great heart from County Waterford has done it.